Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's been a long time.
You're being tested again. This time you're carrying a child.
They took me from my sisters.
No one said it was going to be easy, kiddo.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 67 for the week of April 20th, 2015. I am Chatty Anthropod, David T. Cole, and I'm here with straightened hair of moral compromise, Sarah D. Bunting.
I love it when the plan comes together.
School board trustee candidate, Tara Ariano.
Oh, I will take you down.
And former Clone Wars viewer, Jeff Alexander.
I have a bad feeling about this.
Hello, everybody. Sorry for the delay. Here we are, back again for EHG 67 with Jeff Alexander. Welcome, Jeff.
Hi, Jeff.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
A couple announcements before we get to it. First of all, thanks to the delays in recording, there will be no minis this week. Try to soldier on. Everything should go back to normal. Next week.
No, but why drop? Oh,
yeah,
no.
Was that a drop?
No. The what? Yes, that was a drop.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And also, we have a new phrase that doesn't pay, which might help you pass the time. So keep an ear out for that and submit your guesses on our dedicated thread in the forums.
Did we tell them what last?
No, David Thomas guessed the last one, which was dry humping.
Yeah, dry humping.
For understandable 4 weeks, why.
Dry humping.
Understandable why it was such a stumper, because we are filth mouths.
And, true. Weeks of dry humping.
The last piece of site business before we start is my audio trigger finger has a giant second degree burn blister on it right now.
I can confirm this.
Soup incident. So if there's audio miscues this week, that's probably why, because I can't really bend it that well.
Also, this is not what the burn was not no. What delayed the podcast record.
Technical
that was a completely different
stuff.
Calamity, yes. On the same day.
Yeah. So, and now you're all cut up, everybody. Yay. All right. Shall we get into it? Our
sure.
Lead topic is Orphan Black Season 3. It has started. Our correspondent, Jeff Alexander, is back to talk to us about it. So let's throw it to him for first thoughts. Jeff, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was, you know, a good mix of new stuff and the stuff that you love Orphan Black for, clones being clones and some craziness and some kinky stuff and violence and nastiness and all that stuff you like Orphan Black for. So I'm liking it so far. As I said a couple weeks ago on the podcast, I was a little worried that some of the boy clones would kind of steal some screen time from the clones that we actually care about. So far, that doesn't seem to be the case. I have seen the second episode, and they are getting a little more attention in the plot line, so we'll have to watch that carefully. But so far, I'm optimistic.
And what do you guys think?
Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, I came to the series by doing a marathon of the first season and then dropped into the second season sort of normally week to week like everyone else probably was watching it. So my experience with the show was that the first season was like really intense and twisty and unpredictable. And the second season was a little more of a predictable potboiler. But I really can't tell if that's just because I marathoned the first one and week to week the second one, or if that's actually a thing. But either way, it's so much fun watching this cast work that I don't really care if the plotting doesn't make sense and there's a lot of talking villain moments, which there are, because it's just, I don't know, I think they have to look for situations to sort of show off the premise, which they do, and they show off the premise to great effect. So it's not like sometimes forgettable plots or like sort of not being able to keep track of the triple crosses doesn't really bug me the way it might otherwise, because it's a fun company to right. watch working.
I wonder if it might not be so much the marathon in, or rather it's that season one was sort of a journey of discovery, you know, like it's like, here's this yeah. one clone, here's the next yeah. one, here's another one. Oh my God, there's more than four. No, that's more than six. And you keep on going like that. And then the second season, that sort of settles down somewhat. And then it's a little bit more about, you know, the Institute and all the people there and what are they doing and all that sort of stuff. So I could kind of get that, but I wonder, it probably could be the marathon too, only because you mainlined it. You mainlined Discovery and it's hard to come back from that.
Right. But Discovery is like, of those two, Discovery versus conspiracy yeah. unravelry, the conspiracy would be my more favorite part. So I think actually if I'd flipped it, it would have been... like the gap would have yeah. been more noticeable to me. So who knows?
The overarching kind of myth arc stuff is worrisome to me, especially now that we're getting into season three, that I'm concerned that we may be approaching X-Files territory because, I say that because I'm too dumb to keep track of like whose motivations are what from week to week. And like that,
this, me it, too.
In the
totally
premiere,
the
especially, I really felt like, what is Delphine's loyalty? Like, why is she even still around? Kind of like, I get that she's a scientist and she, you know, is interested in that aspect of it. But I also like, I don't really know who her loyalty is to. And also bringing in other people that are sort of highly placed in the organization, like this new guy, Ferdinand. I wonder why no one who knows that this is a clone story, who's in the story, is more suspicious about it. Like when they go in and see Allison in that terrible Sarah wig, it was like, that's a terrible Sarah wig and no one's going to say anything. Like, I feel like if I were any of those people, I would be assuming that they were pulling like twin hijinks on it, everyone all the time.
Just assume you're in a Scooby-Doo episode.
Exactly. I don't know why there isn't more like
freaky every day. Yeah. Not
yeah,
just Friday.
I mean, like I came to this record straight from from editing the episode of The Flash that was all about a shapeshifter. And there was a lot of things that John Ramos, our Flash correspondent, put in there about like, why don't people ask questions to confirm people's identities and stuff. And like, I feel like there should be fail safes set up that, you know, that people in Orphan Black are running all the time.
This highly technical institute just throw some chips in their heads when
yeah.
they're, yeah. I mean, that seems like, you know, just if nothing else, a simple RFID low frequency identity chip.
I'll just scan them quick.
Like you put on your pets.
Like,
totally.
Yeah, like, yeah. Yeah, micro, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Come here. Bloop, bloop. Oh, you're Rachel. Hi, Rachel.
What fun would that be, though?
Yeah.
That brings up my question, which is this. Can the show survive or maybe even thrive in a post like Dyad Institute world where that isn't the main thrust of the series, but
yeah.
we're just having basically Clone Force 5 out in the world doing whatever as a group? I mean, I don't know how they're going to engineer that, but I find like the longer the Dyad Institute exists, the more incredulous that becomes as a plot point, because it doesn't really seem like they got their shit together in a way that really makes them the ultimate foe or like a really, really good challenge. Like there's something about that. This is like the weakest link in the chain of all the pieces of this show. And I don't really care about what happens. You know, you were mentioning like, who's double crossing who? What's it? I don't really care. I just want to see the clones in action. Like
yeah.
that's what, for me, the show's about. And I worry that if they carry this on too long, you know, like, and they'll do something where the Dyad Institute, you thought they're the big bad. Guess
yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah.
There is the ultra society of institutes.
Yes. The triad. What?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's
the comparison
how gonna...
I keep. Yeah. The comparison I keep thinking of is Burn Notice, where, you know, Michael would yes. find out about the conspiracy who burned him and then the people behind them and then the people behind them. It just got ridiculous.
Yeah.
But like Sarah was saying, you know, I don't really care about the plotting. If you're, and I think I said last year, if you watch this for the plot, you're going to be frustrated.
Yep.
You know, it's just, it's kind of moments and, you know, character interactions strung together by this sort of framework that's pretty much secondary to what, mm-hmm. you know, I think we actually tune in for.
Yeah.
I think they could actually theoretically and very plausibly wrap up the storyline and turn this into a clone anthology story series where, you know, a few of them go on a little adventure for a couple episodes. They come back and, you know, they all go to Rome for a weekend or something. I don't know. It'd be fun.
I'd watch that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there seems to be more and more that they're uncovering that they're finding all the time. Like, there's more girl clones than anyone had any idea there were. And I, you know, at this point, I am completely trust Tatiana Maslany's ability to play any kind of a person or creature.
I agree.
I didn't realize that was her until your post, Jeff. The Scorpion.
Yeah, I figured who else would it be?
Yeah, it had to be.
It's not the little girl who plays Kira, bless her heart.
Nope. I'm excited to see the second episode if you say that the boy clones are in it more, not because I'm that interested in them, but because I would like to see more differentiation between them. Like, do they have different motivations? Are they as different as the Sarahs or, you know, what
the second episode? Yeah, second episode mostly focuses on a couple of them that are kind of out running around. And, you know, they're not able to rely on quite as much hair acting as Tatiana Maslany can do. they're differentiating them so far. There are not that many of them yet, so I'm fine with that.
How many episodes until everybody realizes the only way they can really break down the Institute is if the boys and the girls team up together? I'm guessing six more.
Yeah.
There'll be a song from the Brady Bunch episode, and good.
I mean, despite all the stuff about the Diet Institute, I always enjoy Orphan Black. It's not a show that I particularly feel like I ever want to rewatch, just because, you know, the plot line is kind of the weaker part of the equation for me. But I was kind of bummed when she was up for the lead role in that Rogue One film, the Star Wars kind of spinoff, and she didn't get it, because that seems like she would be great for that. I mean, she's got kind of the action chops and, you know, she can do whatever, but she lost out to that. But I was kind of bummed about that. But I'll keep watching just as long as she's in it, because, like, she's great.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of tiresome, but, like, when is she going to fucking get an Emmy for all that?
Well, really, like, you know, I hate to be that guy, but it's like, I don't know. Like, I totally forget that it's not, like, five or six different people.
Yeah, me too. Who did the premiere change anybody's favorite clone?
Allison. Still Allison.
Me too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nope. I'm a Dreads girl. I don't know why. Mm. I just find her very charming.
She's good. Yeah. She's good too.
I like her. We're both from Minnesota, so I'm on Kasima's side.
I mean, I have to be on the side of all the clones because Tatiana Maslany is from Regina.
Of course.
And Regina is wide open.
Back to the old school, cause I'm an old fool who's so cool. If you wanna get down, I'ma show you the way. Boom. There it is, let me hear you say
Coop, there he is. Coop, there he is. Coop, there he is.
God, I can't believe we have to listen to this five more times.
I can't believe that was mixed together and we only, I mean, who knows how much longer we have with it, because my theory could be blown up at any time. However, as of this recording, Wednesday, April 22nd, it is still summer of 1970 in the Mad Meniverse, and Don is feeling increasingly alienated, even for him. His apartment is sold, so he kind of has nowhere to go. Sally is almost permanently disgusted with him, I think. And most of the episode is devoted to examining the meaning of it all, and Don really not finding anything or not finding any comfort in what he is hearing. This is a little bit tiresome, even for those of us who assume the big payoff is Don jeteeing off to the aft stairs of a 727. As a viewer, it's not that exciting. I feel like we've done this before repeatedly for the last four seasons, but DB Cooper theory still in play.
I gotta give a shout out to Dawn's real estate agent too, because that all those sleeveless outfits really showed off her pre-Madonna wiry Madonna arms to great effect, I thought.
And yet there was that random like bracelet. Could anyone figure out what that like donut was on the front the outfit?
I thought it was supposed to be like a belt, like a belt buckle type of thing, but like not a functional belt, just a decoration.
Okay.
That's my best guess.
I have a little maybe additive to your D.B. Cooper theory, or maybe at least another reason why Don just wants to escape from everybody, and that is that Glenn made the moves on his ex-wife. And that's something we don't want in your head, I think.
Fucking Glenn.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
What?
Who wanted to see more of Glenn?
Yes.
Who wanted to see Glenn's ever merkin of chest hair?
Yes.
Like an evil Donny Osmond.
He was. I mean, I said, but like when he was talking about going to report, I was like, well, I don't know why everyone's so upset he's going to show up in those pants and the army is going to reject him.
Well, and of course the actor's middle name is Holden. Yeah. I mean, really?
Well, and of course his name is Martin, but spelled with an E. Like, really? You have to be that interesting, Matthew Weiner? Whatever.
Now, because this is takes place in the era in which movies started, you know, doing the, you know, the Animal House end of...
Yeah.
It really should have had, like, a final scene with Glenn, just like the Chirons, like, killed by his own troops in Vietnam.
Hi, Liv.
Hi, Mom.
We just finished watching the season finale of season 8 of Face Off.
It was fun.
Yeah, you enjoyed it?
Yep.
What was your favorite part about the episode?
I like to see the characters that they made on display. And I liked how there was the scenery for everything. I thought that part was really cool.
Cool. So let's talk about the characters a little bit. What was the challenge for the finale?
The challenge for the finale was that they had to create 4 characters in the teams of everyone who managed to get on Face Off. They had to, there were movies, and they had to choose a name for the movie. Mm-hmm. And what's it called again?
A genre.
A genre.
Yes. And so they were saying the challenge was to make a new franchise. So
the franchise.
The things, so it's like movies and merchandise and that kind of thing. So that, and rides and amusement parks, so that people will want to keep spending money on the same characters over and over again.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
You have a quizzical look on your face.
What's that?
You look puzzled. So when there's big companies, they want you to spend your money on characters that you like. So they're saying, you make a movie that have 4 characters that other people will like and will want to spend money on them.
Okay, like $1,000 to buy it?
No, it's just you keep spending different money. You know how you have a princess dress and you have a princess doll and you have a princess crown and you have princess books?
Yeah.
That's the Disney franchise. Thanks, Disney.
What do you mean?
Nothing. That's for the grown-ups. I'm sure there are people out there that feel me. So there were 3 different movie genres that they got to choose from. And you got to learn a few things this week, right?
Yep.
What did the first one, what did Emily pick? Post-apocalyptic?
Oh, post-apocalyptic. Not even close.
Close enough. And do you remember what it means? You want to look at your notes?
After a disaster of the universe and the characters have to live in it.
Right. So post means after, and apocalyptic is kind of a disaster that happens to a bunch of people. And then what was the one for Logan?
Sci-fi.
And
science fiction.
Right. And you know what that, you know what fiction means?
Yeah. Imaginary.
And then what did Darla get?
Fantasy, magic, superhero.
Supernatural.
Supernatural, romantic.
Yeah, it's a little romantic. And so then what, the characters were made, and after they all made 4 different characters, what happened with them?
They got to be on display.
Yes, at the Warner Brothers Studio.
Warner Brothers Studio?
Yes. There's
museum?
No, it's more like an amusement park, kind of like when you went to Disneyland.
Okay.
And so imagine when we were at Disneyland, you could line up and see brand new characters.
From Face Off?
Well, no, because it would, anyway, kind of like that.
Okay.
Okay. And which was your favorite group of characters?
I've actually got to say that Logan was my favorite.
Yeah?
but I was still voting for Emily.
Did you like Logan's the best because his were all based on animals?
I kind of do like animals.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that the makeups were cool mm-hmm. for his.
Yeah, he did make nice makeup. I thought Darla's were very pretty. She's very good at making things look pretty.
I thought everyone on Face Off was.
Yes, but she's particularly good at the makeup. You know, she uses different colors to represent the stuff that she likes, and they were all very beautiful.
Okay.
And who was the final winner?
The final winner was actually Darla.
Yeah.
And Laura was the 2 times winner.
Yes. Now, what do you think about the whole coaching aspect of it? Do you really feel like Laura won Face Off?
No.
It seems weird to me that they would even make that a thing. I get the coach, like it's important to have somebody come and guide the contestants. But at the end, when Laura was saying, oh, I feel so honored to have won Face Off again, I don't really feel like she won anything.
Well, it's kind of winning the help that she gave Darla.
Yep.
Maybe.
Did she get a prize? I don't even remember if they said or if it's just the honor of...
It's just the honor.
Oh, well, that's nice for her. She can put it on her resume.
What's a resume?
Well, you say all the things that you've done before and try and get a new job.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And now I have a question for you from Dave Cole. Dave Cole thinks that it's unfair to have the last challenge be a team challenge because then it's more about managing people than it is about the artwork. What do you think about that?
I think that it's easier to have help. But if I were the people who ran Face Off, I would make the artists have teams all the time and make the teams go away for the finale.
Oh, so it would be easier up front and then super hard at the end?
Yeah.
Ah.
To make the finale a finale.
Yep. You're an evil genius, Liv.
What's that mean?
It means that you want things to be hard for those people, but you're so brilliant. It's such a smart idea.
Thanks, Mom.
Thanks so much for doing all the face-off challenges this... Not the challenges. Thank you for doing all the podcasts this season. It was a lot of fun to watch with you.
Thanks, Mom. It was fun watching face-off with you, too. And we'll see you the next time in July if we record this.
Yay!
Mommy.
Oh, Leah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I was really impressed that she turned that around.
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah,
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Liv, and thanks, Leah, for the whole season of the cover.
Yeah, the Disney
and thanks, Disney.
It seemed like she was I feel looking like forward to her hiatus, maybe.
This segment might be robbing Liv of, I'm going to say about 6 months of her childhood. She's learning some things about the world and commerce and everything.
By the time the show comes back, she'll be 7. She'll be much better equipped to deal with all of these.
Plus, she's free.
Plus, she's free.
Okay, it's time to go around the dial. First stop, Tara.
I just want to talk about the Justified series finale, which I don't think ended how anyone thought it would, but I found very satisfying.
Very satisfying. What did you think? Yeah, I agree.
All the people that you most wanted to die definitely got killed.
But not in a sort of like over-the-top way that seemed inconsistent with the rest of the series. You know, sometimes it's just like you have this slow burn series and then the finale, the world blows up.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It wasn't like that. It was just still a small town story mm-hmm. at its heart and it worked.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's safe to talk about it since it aired over a week ago now.
Well, yeah. And if you haven't watched
the finale, go away. Yeah. But I think there was a lot of the speculation at the top of the season about, like, is Raylan going to kill Boyd or is Boyd going to kill Raylan or is Ava going to kill either of them, which certainly it seemed like she did at the end of at least one episode after she shot Boyd, which he survived. But I really, by the end, only cared that Raylan killed Boone, and he did. So I was satisfied because fuck that guy.
And I will say the one misstep of the finale was putting Raylan in that giant black fedora.
That stupid hat that he took off Boone at the end. Yeah, that was dumb. That was a really stupid looking hat.
Yeah, it didn't look good.
But I understand the symbolism of his original hat getting shot and saving his life, maybe. Yeah. But I also was not crazy about him letting Ava get away with stuff just because it turned out she had a baby. Big deal.
Really, the worst thing about this episode was that he was wearing a Miami Marlins baseball logo t-shirt. And that is probably the worst logo right now in Major League Baseball. I don't follow sports, but I follow sports logos because I'm kind of fascinated by the whole process and the history of them. And that's the worst.
Sarah, you're a baseball fan. Do you agree?
Yeah.
It's pretty smurfy, right?
Yeah. No, it's very smart. You're talking about the like Rainbow M 70s rec room. Yep. Yeah, it's
But it's not like it's not sufficiently
retro.
Like
we're embracing the color of, you know, the colorful Miami. No. Just pick a color.
Yeah, where's the logo of the German tourist getting gunned down in the alley?
The 90s were a long time ago, Dave. Anyway,
that's Throwback Thursdays.
I've been saying every time we've talked about Justified on this podcast, which is a lot between the current one and our old incarnation, is I've always said that what I thought the show did really well was show that, you know, it's such a cliche, but like Raylan and Boyd really are two sides of the same coin, and they have more in common maybe than they have differences. And that final scene, I think, really underscored that nicely. And I also want to give a shout out to the show for doing a better job of bringing back all of the characters from previous seasons who were still alive that you actually really wanted to see. Mad Men, no one was clamoring to see this fucking new waitress at all. Yeah, or Megan, or goddamn Glenn. And other than Bob, because mostly because I'm so over Patton Oswalt at this point, like seeing Limehouse again was fun. Obviously, it was like great to have Loretta come back. And so I thought they did a really nice job of integrating all of those old faces in a way that was that felt organic and made
and
sense.
Now with all the players where they are at the end of the series, Loretta's going to run that town. She's going to be the new Mags.
She's the new Mags for sure. Yeah. Yeah, I put in my post that at the moment when it seemed like maybe after there was the shootout between Raylan and Boone and both of them fall, and it seems like maybe Raylan has gotten shot, which he has, but he's only been grazed. Loretta is there, and so is Ava, and she's a fugitive, and I thought it would have been super cool, and I would have been fine with it if it turned out that the end of it was Ava tells Loretta where the money is, and the two of them become crime bosses, you know, somewhere else and run everything. And join forces, anti-Cagney and Lacey style. That would have been great. But ultimately, it was a wonderful show. And if you haven't watched it, you should. If you haven't watched it, I don't know why you're listening to the segment. But even if you know some of who dies and who doesn't, it's still amazing.
And now we go to Jeff Alexander.
Daredevil, this is not technically on the dial, but Netflix's Daredevil series has been renewed for a second season already. I guess that's one advantage to releasing the whole season all at once is that you only have to wait a week and a half to see if it's going to be a big enough hit to bring back. The original showrunner, well, the replacement showrunner who did the first season is leaving, being replaced by Douglas Petrie, another Buffy the Vampire Slayer producer, and also Marco Ramirez, who used to work on Sons of Anarchy. So that's coming back for another season, which probably bodes well for the whole Marvel subset of shows that Netflix is going to be doing.
The street team.
So AKA Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, those should probably all do well leading up to The Defenders, which I believe will combine all of them for at least one season.
Right?
So yeah. So
this is just my preference, but as someone who's winding up a Buffy rewatch right now, this is the preferable producer to have on it. I think that, yeah, I would give it another look in season two based on that. So,
Quickly, I don't want to run us into another Daredevil lead topic segment, but you're our Daredevil correspondent as well as our Orphan Black correspondent.
Indeed.
What is your.
Thanks for noticing.
What is your. I wrote it on my hand. What is your.
He couldn't quite see it. It took him a while to make it out. Blindness joke.
What's your take so far?
I am taking it pretty slowly. I'm only three episodes in right now. I have to get to the fourth one pretty soon here, but I'm watching it almost like one would watch a normal series, which is probably how no one else is doing it. But I'm liking it so far. I think I'm just from what I've been able to glean from Twitter, I think people either really love it or they kind of get worn out on it, you know, from the binge watching. But, you know, since I'll be doing weekly pieces on it, I don't think that'll be an issue for me. So maybe I'll have a different take on it. It'll be, you know, 10 weeks from now by the time I'm done, by which point everyone will have forgotten about it. But
don't say that.
It's all good. So I'm enjoying it so far.
He says, realizing he just talked himself out of a job.
Well, it is. I mean, summer's coming up. Maybe we could double up. We'll see.
Yeah, sure. There you go.
And Jeff, you'll have to hit me on Twitter when you get to the car scene. Because that's pretty good. Yeah. All right. Sarah D. Bunting.
Speaking of renewals, Catfish.
Ugh.
This needs to be canceled.
Yes, it does. And
look, as much as I enjoy, this is the only thing about it that I enjoy is Tara's coverage / live tweeting it along with Tara and fuming in its general direction. Mm-hmm. But the last episode was like, first of all, they think they're breaking the fourth wall by being like, well, no, what do? We don't have an episode. Like, it's so contrived and horseshitty. And also, like, that's not working. Like, it's not creating compelling drama. And also, if I want to watch Queen for a Day, I'll get on damn Hulu and watch Queen for a Day.
Explain what happened.
What happened was that there was, like, a triple catfish, basically, where, like, the two, the catfisher and the catfishy catfished the show so they could get a plane ticket to meet each other. Like, there was no sketchiness, like, in their relationship, except that they pretended there was in order to get the show to have them meet, and they're still together, and yay. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, how, you know, it's a minute 26, and Max is like, well, what if we don't have an episode? I'm like, this must happen all the time, as Tara astutely pointed out, and has pointed out before, about other shows where it's totally fillery, and whatever guest host is like, I don't know, singing a song in the car. And it's like, no one, you're running out of material. It's very clear.
Well, they still have the Claymation episode to do, the musical, the musical episode.
Musical episode.
They got a little runway still.
The problem with the show, though, is that even in this episode and then on the podcast afterwards, they basically admitted, like, it's gotten to critical mass with enough people that, like, it's easy for people to pull this off.
It's the American Idol auditions all over again.
Exactly. And, like, we even saw that at the beginning of last season when Antoine and his cousin, like, she was, like, pretending to be helping all along, and then finally when they got to the last address they were going to try, was like, it's been me!
Right.
Because you called me Fat Kelly Price, which was awesome. Like, I'm not going to act like that wasn't a good episode. It was, but it also wasn't the first one or the last of last season where somebody was like, I was hoping to get on Catfish all along, especially now that we know that it really is usually the subject that applies to be on the show, not the person that in the show is supposedly seeking the person. Like, it's there's so many levels of fakery that have now been revealed that I don't know how, especially in this episode when Neve was like, well, the authenticity of our show has kind of been compromised. Like, you're so ridiculous.
Yeah.
The
like, oh, I'm sorry, Nobel candidate
already,
Neve Schulman.
Yeah.
Shut up.
And the movie has already, like, been called into question, like, long ago.
And I find their sort of self-importance just as compelling. Like, nobody really watches it to learn how to Google or figure out how people oovoo each other. Like, you know, that's a big part of it. But maybe what they need to do, and I wondered this starting, like, a season and a half into Intervention, when the addicts were always like, is this Intervention? It's like, no, it's Schminter Ben Fun. Okay. Because, like, I mean, they're addicts.
We put the fun back in Interbent Fun.
Yeah. Hey, someone's got to do it, right? But then Intervention took off for a while, and I do sort of wonder if they aren't able to now leverage that with the current people whom they're filming.
Yeah.
It's like, well, is this Intervention? Like, oh, no, that's off the air. Like, well, it was for a while. Maybe what Catfish needs is a sabbatical.
Yeah.
Maybe or just take a. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Maybe it needs to take an approach like The Hills, where, you know, how true it is becomes part of the storyline, and then at the end they just, you know, roll the sets away.
Yeah, well, they're already sort of – MTV's already sort of doing that with the revived Teen Mom 1, which now they're annoyingly calling Teen Mom OG, which I refuse. But it's way more transparent about how they shoot the show, and especially in the last episode when they – this week's episode when they brought back Farrah, the disgraced member of Teen Mom OG who had to go on couples therapy by herself – because the person that she was going to have a fake relationship with to get on the show backed out at the last minute, but whatever. We're not going to get into this. It's much more interesting to show like how the show is made and show them like talking to producers and actually dramatize like what those relationships have evolved into over all these years of doing the franchise. But I also suspected after like back in season two, when they were starting to, it seemed like they were starting to have more, you know, people turning out to be who they really were and happy endings, that it was eventually going to have to just pivot to being a regular dating show, which they also could still do. And that latest episode would work for that purpose if it was like the point of the show is just to bring people together.
I don't even know what show you're talking about
Catfish.
Anymore.
Catfish. Okay. I'm back to Catfish.
Cool.
Sorry. This better be amazing and not just the Carvel commercial again, Dave.
I really blister finger. Don't know who I am.
A case of amnesia.
He seems confused.
And a case of loot.
Is this stolen money?
Add up to a case of trouble for Sally and Bernie on Mom PI Monday.
Oh, so it's not.
Why do more Canadians shop at Dominion than at any other store?
Why, it's mainly because of the meat.
Mainly because of the meat?
Yes, it's mainly because of the meat.
Why, Canada? That and the milk commercials? Guys.
I had
too young to hear this.
When I was a kid, I had like a semi-truck, semi-truck toy that was from Dominion, and it's like huge letters on the side. It's mainly because of the meat. Yeah. So there you go.
Good story.
son of a bitch.
Oh, for Christ's sake, fuck off, Cole.
Gonna try this one first.
Dick.
It's time for the canon, Jeff.
Oh, I have to follow that.
All right, everybody calm down.
Yes.
Jeff has take it away, Jeff.
Okay. I'm submitting an episode of Cheers. It's called Simon Says, originally aired March 5th, 1987. So we're in the Wayback Machine. This was late in the show's fifth season. That was the last season that Shelley Long was on the show as Diane. And by this time in the series mythology, she was engaged to be married to Sam. Anyone who ever watched the show knows how that turned out. And if you didn't know how it turned out, let's say that Kirstie Alley replaced Shelley Long the following season. So for this episode, it's like late in the season, and the setup is that Frasier has a friend coming in from out of town.
Hey, Frasier.
Usual?
Oh, not just yet. I'm meeting a friend for a drink. Simon Finch-Royce. Mm.
Dr. Simon Finch-Royce, the noted marriage counselor?
No, Dr. Finch-Royce, the circus geek.
So when Dr. Finch-Royce shows up, he's played by none other than John Cleese.
Good to see you, Simon. How was your flight, all right?
Oh, relatively crash-free.
And Diane, being an overachiever and sort of a starfucker, imposes herself on the conversation.
You know, I had a thought. Sam and I are about to be married, and dare I ask it, could you be persuaded to possibly have a session or two with us?
Oh, Diane,
I think it's a capital idea.
Oh. Well, then let it be my wedding gift to you. I was considering the gravy boat, but I think our relationship transcends mere crockery.
So the doctor and Diane and a reluctant Sam head into Sam's office to begin their session right away.
Well now, where to begin? Well, usually at this point, you would tell me what a loathsome, contemptible swine he is, and you would describe in some detail what a wanton, libidinous trollop she is. But as you're only engaged, we'll just have to look forward to that.
So he spends what seems like hours with them, and then finally arrives at his conclusion.
That's it?
Of course, Sam. That's all he has to hear. The good doctor is a brilliant man. I'm sure he has a complete handle on our relationship.
Yes, I have. You two should not only not get married, you should never see each other.
And for some reason, this comes as a shock to the couple, and even Sam is pretty stunned.
Well, don't go. What should we do?
Well, think yourselves lucky. I mean, you found out now. Save yourself years, perhaps decades, of pain and heartache.
So Finch-Royce takes off. He charges Frasier $1,500 for the session on his way out.
In 1987 dollars, that's probably like $5,000 now.
Yeah, that's got a sting. So after a minute, Diane decides that Finch-Royce is only testing them. So she drags Sam to Finch-Royce's hotel and starts what will become an extended campaign to defend their relationship. And this is where the episode really gets going and becomes a chronicle of a quiet evening ruined.
Sorry about this. We didn't catch you on the hopper, did we?
No, but thanks for asking. Well, come in.
This will only take a moment. You know, you're a very clever man. It wasn't until after you'd left that we realized you were merely testing our resolve. So we stand before you now as proof we are steadfast in our devotion to one another.
Well, that's very lovely, but it wasn't a test.
Oh, listen to him, Sam. It's yet another test.
I'm afraid I haven't made myself sufficiently clear. You two are an accident waiting to marry.
So they go back to Cheers, tell the story. Actually, Diane tells the story. And Frasier encourages her not to let it go.
Both of you, go to Fitzroy's. Tell him the truth. Let him make an accurate assessment of your relationship. All right, all right. You owe it to me, you owe it to him, and most of all, you owe it to yourselves.
Yes.
Now, don't come back until you're fully satisfied.
No.
I don't care how long it takes.
All right. Well, thank you.
$1,500 my butt. Frasier Crane can play hardball, too.
Yeah, he's got his own reasons. So they go back to Fitzroy's hotel room for the second time in the episode. They interrupt his dinner. And John Cleese at this point is doing what he does second best, which is his slow burn.
Ah, how lovely to see you again. What's it been, 30 minutes?
And that's far from their last visit.
I wondered what was keeping you. I was beginning to get worried.
Did we get you out of the shower?
No. The soup was so hot it set off the sprinkler system.
Sam and I have been to the library and we've done extensive research. We're here to tell you that you are full of rubbish.
How thoughtful. Those people would only have phoned.
So even as he shows them the door for the third time, Diane is still in denial.
What do you suggest we do?
Nothing.
Oh! That's your solution to everything. Nothing. Is that what you're going to do for the rest of your life? Nothing?
I haven't decided yet.
I've grown to hate them.
So finally they drag him out of bed late at night, and John Cleese does what he does first best, which is his meltdown.
All right, okay. Sam, Diane, you two are perfect together. I'm sorry I made a mistake, but I now see that you are the most perfectly matched couple on the face of the earth. But why am I telling you this? Let's share it with the rest of the world, shall we? Hear this, world! The rest of you can stop getting married now. It's been done to perfection. Envy them, sofa, envy them, chair, for you shall never be as cozy as they, for I guarantee that their marriage will be a total epoch-shattering success, and I stake my life on it! Wait, let me put that on record. I, Dr. Simon Fitzroy, being of sound mind, declare that Sam and Diane shall be together throughout all eternity, and if I am wrong, I hereby promise that I will take my own life in the most disgusting manner possible. Here, take the tape. No, take the whole machine. It's my wedding gift to you. To you, the most perfect couple since the dawn of time!
Then Diane turns to Sam, and she says...
See?
The end. So, couple of reasons I love this episode. It's just funny on its merits, I think. Cheers was always a pretty reliable joke delivery system, I thought. A lot of it was kind of insult humor, but I think this really kind of gets to the situation comedy side of it. And also the fact that, I'm obviously a Monty Python fan. I made it a point to watch this episode at the time because I was a fan at the time. But I think John Cleese brought kind of his own flavor to the sort of Cheers ethos, but still managed to fit in well to the whole scene. So I think that worked well, those two kind of flavors of comedy coming together. And just the structure of it, I think, is brilliant. You know, there's kind of the first act set up, and then the second act, where it's just building and building, and he's getting angrier and angrier. And, finally, the big punchline at the end, it just sells it for me. And, you know, it's as far as a historical document, as we were saying earlier, it's a lot of sitcoms don't look like this anymore. I mean, it's it's multi-camera. There's a laugh track. It's very stagey. But I think this is a good, you know, a good example of what sitcoms used to look like. It was directed by James Burrows, who was a legendary sitcom director even then. Used to work on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. And, you know, I can't even name another sitcom director from that era. So it was, I think the execution of it was very, as we used to say in the 80s, on fleek.
What's that mean?
I already told you it means on point.
No, but where did it come from? I don't understand.
From the streets.
All right, the streets. All right.
Like myself.
Uh-huh. Talk to Daredevil about that.
Yeah, exactly. So, and, you know, maybe it's just that I'm conditioned to laugh whenever John Cleese speaks.
Yeah.
But, and I'm also, but I'm also at the same time sure that I'm not the only one who remembers this is one of the best sitcom episodes ever. And that is why I'm submitting it to the Extra Hot Great Canon.
I love the whole storyline, which there really is just the one. There's no B plot or C plot, builds to that punchline because that is the perfect way to end it. But other than that, this was a tough one for me. I don't think I ever saw this one. Somehow it skipped me in syndication. This was the first time I've seen it to my recollection. But Diane was not my favorite. I'm even as a dumb teenager in the 80s and early 90s, I always preferred the Rebecca years to the Diane years, which I know is heresy, but this is a lot of her-ness. This is a lot of Diane at her like most annoying.
Yeah, which I know is
I know that's the point of the episode. And like I said, the payoff is good, but like getting there is, It was roof for me. And the fact that it's so much of it takes place outside of the bar also makes it like not really a typical episode for me. So as much as I love John Cleese, obviously I live in the world, but the Diane-ness almost canceled him out for me. Sarah.
It is really too bad that, this is a, you know, audio, product because although I think you actually can hear Sam's Cosby cardigan. I think it is, in fact, audible.
With a shawl yet, collar.
Yeah, and yet he's still, like, this is the one man in America who can wear that and still look kind of fuckable.
Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah, I don't, the fact that it wasn't in the bar did not work for me either. It seemed like it was firing on all cylinders while it was still in the bar, and like I was enjoying the like Frasier's bitchiness, which I sort of forgot. That wore down on Frasier, I feel like, but I forgot how sort of tart he was on Cheers a lot of the time, and I laughed out loud at Carla's upchuck and die line, I am ashamed to say, but they were really good with mixing in a lot of puns along with more like sophisticated humorous ideas. But this started to drag for me about halfway through. I do prefer Diane, not a ton, but I do prefer her. This is not a good showcase for what made the character good and a good contrast to everyone else in the show. It was a good episode. I didn't hate it. I liked it. It was good, but I didn't love it. And I don't think it was, not sure it was canon. It seemed a little more obviously sitcom-y than Cheers usually seems.
I agree. And I think John Cleese is used well here. But yeah, if you're in the mood for a John Cleese slow burn meltdown, you'll do better watching Fawlty Towers. For both a longer slow burn and bigger meltdowns.
Yes.
It was a good move to make him Frasier's friend because it really made him fit into the universe. And mm-hmm. I don't think they could go as loud as John Cleese can go and still make it work within Cheers. And I do think it works. But I think either this episode works for you because you think the payoff at the end is worth, as Sarah says, it drags in the middle a bit, or you don't. And for me, I agreed with Sarah. I thought the build up to the meltdown, the third visit, I was sort of ready for the next thing rather than enjoying that process. Not a bad episode, but I would say probably not canon worthy. But if you are in the bag for John Cleese, it's definitely worth seeking out, I would say. Mm-hmm. So let's put this to vote. Tara.
Nay, but thank you, Jeff.
Sarah.
You're welcome.
What she said. Sorry.
And I'm sorry, Jeff. That's three no votes. So
wow.
Cheers. Season 5, episode 21, Simon Says, is not inducted into the extra locker canon.
I'll be all right.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for winner and loser of the week. Whoever has our winner, take it away.
We're going to do the
I have the
winner. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Sarah.
Oh, no, we changed it, so we're not flipping it. Sorry. Oh. I have the winner. It is the historical documents. Galaxy Quest is becoming a show. I'm very excited.
And our loser of the week?
Sorry. Loser of the week is Ben Affleck. Speaking of historical documents, he was going to be featured on...
speaking of Daredevil.
Yeah, yeah. He was going to be on that PBS show about finding your... researching your genealogy, but he requested that they not air a bunch of stuff about how his ancestors were slave owners, which kind of blew up in his face because it's not his fault that his ancestors owned slaves particularly, but trying to cover it up just makes it look way worse.
Yes. May I introduce you to the Streisand effect, Mr. Affleck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Well, that brings up an interesting question, which is this. I'm going to ask you guys, do you know what time it is? It's game time.
Cover up that.
All right, everybody. This is the third game time of the season. Sarah and Tara are tied with 1 point apiece, with Jeff playing for value guess, looking to make it a three-way tie with a victory in today's game, which is The Invisible Man.
Ooh.
From Danielle, who earns herself an extra credit, redeemable for an extra hot, great mini topic of her choosing. In The Invisible Man, each clue is the name of a TV character whose face is not seen for all or most of a series run. Some characters involved were eventually seen or revealed, so keep that in mind.
Okay.
But these are generally mysterious characters whose faces we don't know for a long time.
Got it.
The answer is the name of the show the character appeared on. Each answer is worth 2 points. Or if you ask for a hint, get the answer after the hint, it is worth 1 point. The hint is the relationship between said character and one of the main characters on the show.
Okay.
All right?
Yep.
We have 45 questions in today's game. Let's throw it to Picky to see the order.
We will start with Tara.
All right. We're going to start with Tara. Mm-hmm. And then let's go to Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's go to Jeffra.
All right.
All right. Here we go. The Invisible Man. Tara.
Yep.
We're going to start everybody off with some easy ones.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Your Invisible Man is a lady.
Oh.
And her name is Mrs. Columbo.
Columbo?
Tara is on the board with 2 points, ladies and gentlemen. Sarah, your mystery character, and remember, you have to name the show, is Gossip Girl.
Gossip Girl?
That's worth 2 points. All right, Jeff, your mystery character is The Stig.
What?
The Stig.
Stig. Okay, I guess I'm going to need a clue then.
He is a masked test driver. And a famous one at that.
I'm kind of surprised. I think this
not
was a
me.
Jeffy kind of show.
No, I have no idea.
That was Top Gear. Top Gear. My apologies. I thought that was a gimme. All right, Sarah, Tara.
Yep.
Robin Masters.
Magnum P.I.
2 points. Sarah, Bill Brasky.
Bill Brasky?
Bill Brasky.
Not that mother scratcher. Bill Parker. could I have a hint, please?
He is co-worker to other characters involved. What's the show?
Oh, I don't know. News Radio?
Close.
Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
Tall Tales Told of Bill Brasky in a Bar.
Every goddamn time at that show.
All right, Jeff.
Yeah.
Tino.
Tino?
Tino.
Picky. This is a picky problem.
Oh, My So-Called Life.
You're on the board with 2 points. All right, back to Tara. Sparky.
Sparky, hint.
He is a friend and telephone operator.
telephone operator. Alice.
The show we're looking for is MASH. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Charlie.
Charlie's Angels.
Nice. 2 points. All right, Jeff. I added a little hint in here because this was sitting in my hopper for a bit, so that is a bit of a clue. The, and in brackets, last, as in the last one before right now, the last president of the United States.
Would this be Scandal?
No, but I'm going to give you another guess because of the nature of the... give you a 1 point guess.
Okay.
Former running mate is your clue. It's a relationship. Wow. Yeah.
Oh, is it Veep?
Good for 1 point. All right. Back to Tara.
Yep.
Big Shirley.
Hint.
Girlfriend.
Big Shirley. Girlfriend.
Yep.
Scooby-Doo?
Martin.
Okay.
But. Maris for Sarah.
Maris. Frasier.
2 points. For Jeff, the Gooch.
Oh, Different Strokes.
2 points.
Oh, we're
back to Tara.
Yes.
Your last question before the score break. Your last question. Binny.
Binny?
Binny, B-I-N-N-Y.
Hint.
He was a friend. Look, they all can't be giving
you credit. Nice to you, though.
Fair enough. Leave It to Beaver.
Just Shoot Me.
Oh, yeah. That was a cheat.
All right, Jeff. Angela Valentine.
Nope, this is for Sarah.
Angela Valentine. Sorry.
Hint.
Classmate.
Angela Valentine.
I will say that this show has been mentioned on Game Time.
Okay.
The answer.
It's tempting to answer Benson, but I'm going to go with Head of the Class.
That was Leave It to Beaver.
Oh.
All right, here's our last question for the score break for Jeffrey. The Banker.
Oh, what was that show? Deal or No Deal.
Nice.
Oh.
Well, there's quite a shakeup right before the score break. I have 4, Sarah has 6, Jeff has 7.
All right, good game. Number 16 for Tara.
Yes.
Vera.
Cheers.
2 points. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Diane.
Oh, man, this is going to annoy me. It's right on the tip of my lobe. Hint.
Secretary. Diane the Secretary from
Diane
what show?
The Secretary. Diane!
More like Diane.
Mad Men.
Twin Peaks.
Oh.
Twin Peaks.
Oh.
Different Strokes.
Different Strokes.
Jeff.
Yep.
Ms. Sarah Bellum.
This used to be a joke on the other radio show I used to work on. Don't know. What? Can I get a clue, please?
Yes. Assistant. She is an assistant.
No, I've got nothing.
Miss Sarah Bunting knows.
Does Miss Sarah Bunting know?
No.
She does not.
Oh. Does Powerpuff Girls.
Powerpuff Girls, correct. Correct.
Yeah.
All right, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Khan. Spelt like Madeline Kahn, if that helps you any.
Hint.
Camp director. Uh-huh.
The hell TV show even had a camp? I don't know. I can't even guess one. Saved by the Bell.
Incorrect. Salute Your Shorts.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Sarah.
Yep.
Dr. Claw. Which I would say seen often, but not his face.
Yeah.
Dr. Claw.
If I guess and guess wrong, do I still get the hint or it's burnt? Nope.
It's burnt.
Okay. I don't think the hint is going to help me, so I'm just going to guess Scrubs.
Good guess.
Dr. Claw is the nemesis of Inspector Gadget.
Inspector Gadget.
All right, Jeff.
Yep.
Heather Sinclair.
I want to say... All right, I'm going to ask for a clue.
Queen Bee of High School.
That's what I thought it was. I'm still going to get it wrong, though. Veronica Mars?
Degrassi, The Next Generation.
Okay.
All right, back to Tara.
Yep.
Sarah, the telephone operator.
What's with the operators?
And the Sarahs.
Hint.
Telephone operator.
Fuck. NYPD Blue.
The Andy Griffith Show.
Sure.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
For Sarah, Mrs. Wolowitz. Wolowitz.
Mrs. Wolowitz.
Yes.
Wolowitz.
Wolowitz.
W-O-L-O.
Yes.
Witz.
Yes. Wolowitz.
Hint.
Mother. Who's the mother?
Freaks and Geeks.
Close.
Very close.
Big Bang Theory. I mean, you know, subject matter.
Yeah.
Not quality. Or laughs.
I was like, what?
All right, for Jeff, Luther Sachs.
Clue, please.
Boss.
Okay. Drew Carey Show.
Sports Night.
Okay.
All right. Donnie, Tara. D-O-N-N-I-E, Donnie.
Hint.
Neighbor.
Neighbor Donnie.
Neighbor Donnie. You're not going to get this.
Okay.
Trailer Park Boys.
Correct.
All right. For Sarah, Wilson. Yep. Wilson.
Home Improvement.
Correct. Neighbor from Home Improvement. Excuse me. Neighbor. Jeff. Ugly Naked Guy.
Friends.
2 points. Also a neighbor. That was our everybody got a neighbor round.
Got it.
Back to Tara.
Yep.
Crazy Rhoda Zimmerman.
Oh, I know it. Fuck. Rhoda Zimmerman. Crazy Rhoda Zimmerman. Don't trust the bee in apartment 23.
That was The Odd Couple.
Oh. Yeah.
Carlton. Carlton for Sarah. Carlton.
Carlton?
Yeah, Carlton.
Hint.
He is the doorman.
He is the doorman. Carlton is the doorman on, The Jeffersons.
So close.
Rhoda.
Great era.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, here we are. Last question for our second score break.
Okay.
Peg's mother.
Married with Children?
Married with Children. Yes, correct. All right, let's hear them score.
Well, I have 6, Sarah has 8, Jeff has 11.
Whoa, all right. And everybody has 5 questions left, I think.
All right.
Here we go, back to Tara.
Yep.
Dr. Dick. Dr.
Dick.
Is this Scrubs?
That was from a show called Sybil?
Oh, yeah.
He's the ex-husband.
Okay.
Dr. Dick.
All right.
I don't know what that show
is. Oh, Sybil. It's the Sybil Shepherd, Christine Baranski sitcom.
Oh.
All right.
American Abfab.
All right, Sarah. Orson. Yep. Orson.
Orson. Orson. Oh, shitsky. Orson. Orson. Orson.
Here's a here's a question that I think you'll know, but you don't know it.
Okay.
When I say it, you're going to be like, oh, fuck.
I'll just kill some time with trivia and say that my husband, when he was a soap opera villain, played a guy named Spider Smith, but the guy's given name was Stanley Orson Smith.
Oh, my. Why would he change to Spider?
Is it loving?
Is that your guess? Straight
yes.
to the guess? Incorrect. Orson was the supervisor from Mork and Mindy.
Oh, of course it was. Yeah.
All right. Jeff.
Yes.
Socko.
Socko?
Yeah, Socko.
Clue, please.
Best Friend.
I have no idea.
I think you are too old and do not have the right type of child.
I hear that all the time.
iCarly.
Okay.
Oh, Carly. Sure.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Bob Sacamano. Bob Sacamano.
Oh, I know it, but I can't place it. Hint.
Friend. Friend?
My friend Bob Sacamano. Oh!
Yeah.
Oh! torture. Yes, radio. I know it's wrong.
Anybody?
Nothing.
Seinfeld.
Oh.
Yeah. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Harpo.
Harpo?
Yeah, Harpo, like Harpo Marx.
Right. Hint.
Sun. Harpo the Sun, seldom or never seen on this show.
Oh, Harpo. Oh, shit. He goes by Hal now. Is it the Sopranos?
Nice!
Wow.
Giving birth.
All right, Jeff. Wow, that was good. Jeff.
That was easier. Yes.
Stanley.
Okay. Clue, please.
Husband. I will add rich husband.
Okay. Oh, is it Will and Grace?
That's nice. Good for 1 point. All right, Tara.
Yep.
You're being tested again. This time you're carrying a child.
Sally Reardon.
God.
Sally Reardon.
And
friend.
Oh.
Sally Reardon, friend. Sports? Tempted to give you another hint, but I'm not entirely
sports?
Sure I'm right.
Sports night?
Friend, let me. This might not be right. Might be the same person, but I'm gonna guess. Friend on tape recorder.
Oh.
Oh.
Pinky.
Felicity. Correct.
Yeah.
All
no
right.
Points.
Sarah.
Yep.
Captain Bodey. B-O-D-A-Y. Captain Bodey.
Captain Bodey.
Yeah, just something with some sort of ship in it.
And
guessing. Or perhaps he's just like one of those self-appointed captains at a bar. Who's to say?
Hint.
Ship commander.
Oh, Christ. Captain Bodey. Yeah.
If you get it, if you happen to get it, there's an extra Dave points. Let's say 10 Dave points.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. You got Babylon it? 5.
Wow, that was really close. Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Damn it! Wow. I always guess the wrong one of those. Why?
There's too many of them.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah.
Lars Lindstrom.
Would that be Little House on the Prairie?
Oh, it's not.
Great
and
guess, though.
Hometown Pride was at stake. That was the husband, Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Oh, Tyler Moore okay.
Show. All right.
I just knew it was a very Minnesotan name.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yep.
Consuela Valverde.
Hint.
Maid.
Of course she is. Maid Consuela.
Consuela Valverde.
Maud.
Designing Women.
Fuck.
Designing Women. All right, Sarah. Father
yep.
Bigley.
Father
Bigley.
Quigley?
Bigley.
Bigley with a B.
Largely.
Bigley.
Largely. Bigley.
Father Bigley.
I will say this. This show comes up in Game Time once in a while. I'm going to say probably about 5 times so far in the history of the show. Nobody's ever been close to getting it right. But I will say there is a clue in the name, and
uh-huh.
there is a good... there's a hint. Father Bigley. You want the hint?
Touched by an angel.
Is it Father Ted?
It's Father Ted.
Fucking Father Ted.
Oh, fuck! And I'm the one who usually guesses Highway to Heaven, and I'm like, I'll switch it up this time. Wrong again.
All right, Jeff.
Yep.
Nanny. The Nanny. That's not a name. That's just...
Okay.
That's also the occupation, so don't bother asking for a hint.
Okay.
The Nanny is the Nanny. Seldom seen on this show.
All right, I'm not going to say The Nanny.
No.
Could you
imagine, though, if they redid it? It'd be like Garfield without Garfield.
That'd be kind of brilliant.
Digitally remove Nanny from The Nanny.
Yep.
I have no idea.
Muppet Babies?
Muppet Babies, yep. That's
wow,
right.
Okay.
All right, this is everybody's last question, so let's get the scores, please.
Well, I have 6 still. Sarah has 9. Jeff has 12.
Oh, okay. So it's already done.
Yep. But let's do the last round for funsies.
For funsies. Tara.
Yep.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell.
Mr. Bell.
Riptide.
He was the boss. Drew Carey Show.
Oh, okay.
All right. Rhonda. Rhonda for Sarah. Rhonda.
Rhonda. Hint.
Girlfriend. She was the seldom seen girlfriend.
I'm going to guess Freaks and Geeks again. Why not?
Elf.
Wow.
Yeah.
Really? I certainly never saw her.
All right. And Jeff, already cinched it, but can he make the lead a little bit bigger? Your character is Enid Kelso.
Oh, would that be That 70s Show?
It would not. It would be Scrubs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right. Shits and giggles time. First person to shout out the answer to this seldom seen character wins 5 Dave points. Are you ready?
Yes.
Cross-dressing brother Phil. Cross-dressing brother Phil. Anybody? Anybody, especially Sarah? Disappointing.
What is it?
That was Golden Girls.
Completely forgot that was a thing.
Value guess. Ties it up.
Good job, Jeff.
Good job.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great.
We talked about...
I can't even do the voice. We talked about... We talked and talked about Orphan Black's season 3 premiere, complete with boy clones and scorpions. And Sarah continued her Don Draper is D.B. Cooper quest in Coop. There it is. Liv wrapped up the face-off season in excellent fashion before we went around the dial with stops at Justify, Daredevil, Catfish, and Mom P.I. Jeff unsuccessfully pitched us the John Cleese episode of Cheers called Simon Says for the Canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, but Jeff was victorious in game time. Remember,
listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
you've kind of compromised the authenticity of our show.
Sarah D. Bunting.
More like Brostra, am I right?
Jeff Alexander.
Who is a dirty clone?
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Shop at Dominion than at any other store, and it's mainly because of the meat. Because of the meat. Because of the meat.
Best of luck to you. Okay, up you get. Everybody on. Let's go.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.